If your hunger of hearing Josh Wigler and I talk about Survivor is equal to that of a bunch of millennials looking for a goat, check out 300 hours of talking about the first 30 seasons of Survivor between Josh Wigler and I in the Evolution of Strategy. Go to evolutionofstrategy.com or click the banner in the sidebar of robasawebsite.com. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with another edition of our weekly installment where we look at the characters and the stories of Survivor, Millennials versus Gen X, with the great Josh Wigler on the Wiggle Room.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle.
This time I had my arms outstretched forming a T as I was dead staring the computer screen as though I could stare into your soul, but I didn't record this, so you'll just have to believe that I did it.
Why'd you have to make a T?
I don't know. It was just the move that I was making. I was just like kind of like flying around like I was some sort of creature of the apocalypse just staring you down, but with the face and body of Josh Wigler. That's the harbinger of doom.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty good.
That's not bad. That's a pretty good way to go. If like, you know, you're, you know, kind of choosing the form of your destructor, I feel like this is a safer bet than Stay Puft.
Absolutely. For sure.
Not quite as scary.
All right. Well, Josh, welcome back. Week four of the Wiggle Room. What have you been up to this week?
Well, what have I been up to this morning? I've been listening to a lot of Sue Hawk this morning, Rob.
Where?
I've had Sue Hawk on a loop for about 20 minutes earlier today.
Why?
This great video that popped up on the Survivor Reddit earlier in the weekend of it's a clip from the final six of Survivor Borneo reward challenge. Off the top of your head, could you figure out what that reward challenge, what the reward was for?
Final six reward challenge. Is it the mud?
Yeah, I don't remember what the challenge itself was, but the reward
is Final Five.
It's the cruise ship.
Yeah, and Sean wins.
And he's going to pick Richard. So it's this 3-second video clip that was posted on Reddit by someone named Hikaru, and it was uploaded onto YouTube by Earl of Cheeseburger. And it's just a 3-second clip of Sue Hawk making the weirdest noise that has ever been emitted by a human being before. I think you should play it if you can find it.
Okay.
Oh, no, come on.
What is that? That might be the sign of the apocalypse.
Oh, no, come on.
So, yeah, I've just been listening to that for like 20 minutes straight.
On a loop.
Yeah, that was the noise that I was quietly making with my eyes as I was doing my apocalypse dance at the start of the Wiggle Room.
I think that was the noise that she was making when I was spooning with her during some of the rainstorms that we had in Survivor All-Stars.
Are there any memorable Sue Hawk noises that come to mind? Like any just guttural screams that she had that you really remember picking up from your times on Chapara Beach?
I think most of her guttural screams happened after I was in Ponderosa, Josh.
Fair enough. That seems correct. I think history bears that out.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. All right. So, Josh, here we are back to talk about episode number four. Of course, you did your exit interview with Lucy on parade.com. How was your chat with Lucy?
It was fine. She seemed a little sleepy when I talked to her. Yeah, it was, you know, very early in the morning for
sleepy
those
Mama
West
Tiger
Coast people. Yeah, sleepy Mama Tiger. Mama Tiger. Tiger Mama was just waking up. Her cubs maybe still asleep. It was probably like six or so in the morning for her if she's a West Coaster. So I understand the sleepiness, the weariness, but it was fine. Fine interview. It seems like she was a little closer with David than we were led to believe on the show, so she was a little bummed out about what David did there. As I think some other people in the universe were as well, or at least bum puzzled, if not outright bummed by what David did. Nothing especially illuminating from my interview with Lucy. Did you find that you had a very productive chat with Lucy?
Yeah, we had an interesting discussion, certainly. And, you know, it really was getting into a lot of like, men talk to women like this and women talk to men like this. And, I do think it's a little bit of a slippery slope to make such generalizations on these things.
Yeah, like she talked about how like the only men she's met are like the manly men, the men's men. It's like,
yeah, well, she shouldn't talk to us. Well, that's why I act interviews.
Yeah, I was just kind of sitting there just being like, okay, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, Ken's boy. So emotional like a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm a very emotional man myself, so I can relate. I can relate to sensitive Ken for sure. Definitely a slippery slope that we don't need to slip down ourselves here.
So going into the events on the screen this week, Miles Nye was in the studio for the voicemail, said it's the best episode of the season so far.
Best of the season. Would you agree with that? Do you think that that's right?
Yeah, I think episode 4 is the best episode of the season. I do think that so far Millennials versus Gen X is a little bit like the Star Trek movies, where so far the even ones have been good and the odd ones, not bad, but not as interesting.
An even one with an odd ending though this week.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah,
it's a twist ending for sure.
Yeah. So I want to just start off here. I know we don't talk so much about strategy on this podcast, but just in terms of the move that David made to save Jess with the idol, first time we're having a pre-merge idol play that actually worked since Heroes versus Villains. Josh, did you have any thoughts on how that ultimately went down and whether you liked that move or disliked it?
I loved it for television. I thought that it was a great moment. I was flabbergasted. I was surprised by it. I did not understand it whatsoever from a strategic point of view, but as a TV show, as a moment where, you know, you really don't get big surprises like this in the pre-merge all that often. Certainly stemming from idol plays, I do think you have to go back to Heroes and Villains for that. So it was compelling on that level. But as far as a play, I'll co-sign what Fishy is talking about there with like just the big move for the sake of the big move is maybe not the right move. So gameplay wise, I did not like it very much at all. But I do think that. I think that there's something about the paranoia that is just inherent in a guy like David Wright that he has really, you know, made no secret of. Certainly in the pregame was very outspoken about that and has been surprisingly outspoken about it among his tribe mates. I think it's an open secret that Dave is a paranoid guy. And I feel like some of that really got to him here in this tribal council, not for better, certainly for worse. Questionable choice, good TV moment.
Do you think that the big moves thing is really a factor? Because I'm not sure how much I necessarily buy that narrative of somebody who's out there on the beach. I'm sure there are some people that think like, oh, okay, this will be great TV if I make this big move. But I think it speaks more to the fact that David is the same guy who's scared of loud noises.
Right.
I think that it has to do more with his fear of what's going to happen next, more so than I have to make big moves because that's what the show Survivor wants to see.
I think it can be both. And I do think that there's something to the idea of like make the game compelling. I think that you've talked a lot about how like what's the worst that happens? You lose your first try. And if you were really, really good, if you were compelling television, you played the game hard, then maybe you get a return trip to Survivor. So I think there's something to that. Right. I think there's something to that. And I still love that comment in David's interview with Gordon Holmes from before the season about how he's kind of a reverse Cochran and the show is folding in on itself, where the TV writer now becomes the Survivor player as opposed to the Survivor player becoming the TV writer. But I think that David is a paranoid guy, and I think that this tribal got very confusing. I think the really telling thing is Ken votes for Jessica, and David and Cece are voting for Lucy, and we are being told and shown that David and Ken are so, so tight, and what kind of sense does it possibly make for those two to vote apart from each other on this vote with an idol play in the mix, unless there's cross signals, unless something got confused, unless David got really afeared of the temperature in the room of this very live tribal council. So I think that it was more of that. I think that, you know, there's a lot of trying to justify the move because David's been a compelling force this season, so you feel like he's going to be around for a little while, but compelling forces can F it up, you know, from time to time. That's certainly a thing that a compelling figure can do. You win and you lose sometimes. And I thought that this was a big loss for all the reasons that have been outlined by the people you've been talking to about this strategically with, playing an idol this early when you're at 4 and a swap must be on the horizon. The only thing holding that back is that this season is called Gen X and Millennials. So it feels like there is a divide there that maybe will be carried forward for a while. But that just doesn't seem to be where we are in Survivor history. So you got to assume that some sort of merge, some sort of swap, some sort of twist is on on the way right around this point, and you're playing your idol here, it's hard to justify it other than saying, but I really like Dave, and he's really fun, and he's like me, and I want to root for him. But you could still root for him and say it was a terrible move. I think it was a really bad call.
And so for David's setup here going into a potential swap on this week's episode, do you feel like that his story is going to be on the rise in going into another tribe swap? Or do you think that potentially whatever tribe that he goes into next, he could potentially be seen as a pariah in that group, like he's been somewhat with the Gen X tribe so far?
Yeah, well, I don't think that it's necessarily like, you know, I think one of the things that is being talked about a lot from what I'm observing is that, you know, the Gen X story seems to be told through the lens of David and Ken. Like, those are the compelling figures on that tribe. And if you're really banking on the two of those guys doing really well, then that makes some sense to me that they could do well here in this upcoming swap. But the other possibility is that we could just be seeing like the total destruction of Generation X. Like, that could be the story of the generational split this season, is that the millennial way of thinking is the way of proper thinking on Survivor, and that's an old way of thinking, and it's gone really early. And the swap, you know, with Gen X people down by two in the numbers against the millennials, I think that there's every possibility that this could work out very poorly for them, and we could see something of a pagonging against some Gen Xers, and David and Ken could absolutely be included in that. So I don't think that it's necessarily a slam dunk that like the story is so in favor of David and Ken. I think there's a very real possibility that these guys could be swept up in whatever major swell is coming their way, and they might not have the sure footing of Jeff Probst to weather it. So I think that that's definitely on the table. The other piece of it, though, is I think when you go back and you like think about the summit and you think about the moment where David is talking to Taylor and like, I will happily sell somebody down the river from my tribe in order to stay with you guys. I do think that David has done some work to stay in the good graces of, he has the majority of his current tribe that likes him. There's three people on that tribe that don't like him at all right now. I would assume that Chris
I
and
don't
Brett,
like you sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. Dave. Yeah. I don't like you. I think that Chris and Brett and Sunday are probably, you know, Chris is probably going to Hulk out on this guy quite literally when we come back from a tribal in the next episode. So he's got three people that really don't like him, but he's got three people on his tribe that really do like him. And he's got the whole rest of the game. He's got the whole rest of this millennial tribe that he put the bug in the ear, not Jennifer Lanzetti style.
Yikes.
Of I would potentially be willing to work with you guys. I would very happily sell out my tribe in order to work with you guys. So he might have some irons in the fire. That's one possibility, that the David thing could continue to go strong even after what I think was a really bad, awkward tribal council for him. But I could also see this being potentially the end of Gen X. I think that that's something that should be considered, as that could be the next story that we're looking at.
So they're going to get LaFleur'd to the millennials, spotted?
Yeah, they're going to get, I think that LaFleur was the young tribe. And
Whatever. Who, let's, you know, bad on me to even talk about Survivor Nicaragua. But so Josh,
yeah, they're going to get Sawyered is what we're trying to say.
One way or another, though, you mentioned that it could be the end of the Gen X tribe, but it does look like, again, according to what we're seeing in previews, that it is going to be the end of the original Gen X and millennial tribes. And I thought it might be fun to write a eulogy at this point at the end of these tribes from the first chapter of this season. Basically, you know, we have the pre-swap, and then we're going to have the post-swap and pre-merge, and then sort of like, you know, the merge up until like the final group. So, you know, it's really like, you know, four quarters of the Survivor season.
Yeah, I love eulogies. One of my favorite things to do, for sure. Where would you start with this? I mean, I guess.
Well, my first question for you is does the Gen X tribe, do they get a eulogy?
Yeah, okay. They do. I wish I could say nope. Wouldn't that be better if I could just do a nope, like a very earnest nope. But I've liked the Gen X tribe. I've liked the stories that have been told on this tribe. They've been a hot mess of a tribe. You know, they've made some wacky choices, from Jessica's move against Paul really not bearing out in her favor at all. If not for David really making a move here that is questionable at very best, she'd be toast. And David making the move that he makes is also a very bananas move to make right now. It's a weird one to do. And then you've got people like Chris, who, you know, don't poke that bear. Like, we've seen him in action. He's a scary person to make angry. Like the Hulk, you don't want to see him when he's angry. And that just seems to be the mode that, like, we've been getting him in further and further. Like, he even, like, when he's getting worked up in these challenges, at least, like, his skin is getting red. He's going Red Hulk. It's very, very terrifying. So I think that there have been, you know, there have been compelling reasons to watch the Gen Xers. I think that there have been good characters here. I don't mind it when Survivor players are performing poorly, as long as it's interesting. You know, I'm a big, big proponent of, like, the San Juan del Sur of it all. So I don't mind when people are playing a little wacky, and I think that there's been some wacky play on Gen X, so I found it compelling, Rob.
Okay, well, what about the millennials? And just for my two cents, Gen X, you're a very so-so tribe, and not so Kim. I feel like that that replacement
well, so
level
is probably so-so as well.
Yeah. There were some interesting characters. It wasn't always interesting television following the Gen X tribe. I think that this is just a very ordinary tribe for me in Survivor history.
I don't think astounding by any measure. Like, I don't think it's going to be a major standout tribe by any measure. But through the four episodes that we've gotten, I haven't been bored by them. Okay. You know, I've found things to enjoy.
So what about the millennial tribe and their place in Survivor history? How fun has the millennial tribe been for you?
I think that this episode actually really solidified how much I love the millennial tribe. I think it was the boar hunt, which ended up being a goat hunt because there are not pigs on that island, but there is a goat. But just like seeing everybody arm up with the spears, everyone ninja buffing it and like going out into the woods and Jay being
ninja stealth mode.
Ninja stealth mode and Jay being incredible with his whole narration about how awful Gen Xers are and how he never wants to be like that, and just it was fun.
Okay,
it was,
yes. High school, college, 9 to 5. Get a life.
Yeah, his Mayor Quimby impression is really solid. It's a really, really good voice that he does there. But I think there was just something about seeing that group together that really solidified for me that it's an unusual looking tribe. It's an unusual assortment of people. To me, it kind of feels like the closest thing Survivor has ever gotten to like one of those like classic 80s ensembles. I've said that Jay looks like Dustin from Stranger Things, but there is like sort of that element of like these kind of feel to me like the Goonies. Like there's, you know, you've got like Adam is kind of like a Sean Astin type, and like you could probably match it up in other ways if you really stop down and think about it. Like Jay is like the mouth of the group, but there's just something that's kind of like this old school 80s movie kid ensemble in an adventure movie about these kids that I really enjoy, and I keep thinking about them as
to
kids.
To be fair, like, Josh, I do think that Zeke has the same shirt as Chunk wore in the Goonies.
Yes. Yeah, he does. We will have to see if Zeke has a Zeke shuffle that he will bust out at some point in the future.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's the same exact floral shirt that he wears.
It's pretty close. It's really, really close. So I love that. I think that's great. There's just something about this group that cracks me up.
Whatever happened to Chunk? We never see what he looked like as a grown up.
Well, if you do some research, you will find that the actor who played Chunk turned out to be like a decent looking dude who's like a pretty powerful lawyer, I think, or at least a competent lawyer. Turned his back on acting, but he is practicing law and living his life. Isn't that what Jay is talking about at the start of that clip? Doesn't he talk about law in the beginning?
Okay, law. High school, yeah, college, that, 9 to 5.
Okay, law.
Get
yeah,
a
what
life.
Is that first word?
Okay, law. Yeah.
No, okay, law? Is that what he says?
That's what it sounds like to me.
Okay, law.
I thought he was saying, okay, Laura.
Okay, Laura. Yeah, who's he talking to? Who's this mysterious Laura that's off screen?
Okay, Laura.
Okay, Law. Yeah, that's the name of Chunk's show, Okay Law, because it's
law
just all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just okay. Okay Law. I love Jay so much. I've really come to... He's maybe my favorite person out there this season right now. I've really come to appreciate the Jay confessional. I really appreciate the Jay fist bump at the start of round 5 of this reward challenge here, calling Chris the Hulk to his face. There's that great secret scene of or secret confessional online of him talking about, "All right, handsome, it's you and me." There's just like some attitude about Jay that I find really, really entertaining.
He's very funny. He's very funny. I hope we get a chance to see him more in action.
Great future voicemail guest on RHAP, I think, Jay. You know, I think he's going to be really good one of these days. Is that an insult, by the way, to call him a voicemail guest?
It's a touchy subject.
That's a touchy subject, right?
Yeah. But it might be interesting to see, you know, if we do have a few more of the Gen Xers picked off, that if we end up in a post-merge game with most of these big personalities here from the Millennials tribe, it might not be the most strategic season that we've ever seen, but it could be a very fun post-merge.
Well, one of the things that I'm loving about the Millennial tribe, and it's starting to make the Mari vote make a little more sense to me, is I do get the sense that most of these people like each other. And I think that the social circles on the Millennial tribe are not as obvious as Freaks and Geeks and Zeeks versus the Triforce. Like, I think that that's, you know, a convenient thing to show early on, but I get the sense that, like, Zeke and Jay are friends, and it makes sense why Zeke and Jay would talk about voting together at that Mari vote. And I think that there are some complex social dynamics that are going on within the Millennials, and I think that once there's nowhere to hide, and if there's a lot of Millennials still left in the game come merge time or something like that, that could get really, it could get really feisty. It could get really fun, too. It could get very playful. It could get very whimsical, and it could also get really nasty.
Whimsical. So
I think that the potential for this, you know, for this tribe really playing out, I think that, you know, I think that there's a lot here. I think that they're fun. I think that they're entertaining. They leave me laughing every week. And this week especially, I really enjoyed them.
It's a fun group. All right,
it's a good
Josh,
group, I think.
Also, we had the discovery of the hidden immunity idol from the Millennials by
yes.
Adam. Did you have any thoughts on that in terms of Adam and his character, which I understand the, you know, the, his story, but I don't know if I necessarily know him as a character yet.
Well, the only immediate thought that I had is it's really no shock that Hannah discovered him finding the idol because he's just always shouting. So, you know, she probably knew exactly where on the beach to go.
Yeah, he does do the Big Brother diary room confessional. He's like, I'm looking for the hidden immunity idol again, and if I find it, I could really use it. Like, he's very loud in the confessional.
It seemed to me for a quick second you were going towards a Prince Siska, and I was going to be very impressed. I don't think I've ever heard your Prince Siska before.
No.
But no, he does have that voice, which is it's a little weird sometimes.
Being a have-not is something I definitely would not want to have this week.
Yeah, he really projects, that guy. Great future podcaster.
Great pipes.
With Adam Klein as well, potentially.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, you know, certainly we got a lot of his personal story, what his personal journey is and his personal tension of his mother being very, very sick and him being out here and finding idols as a lifelong super duper fan of Survivor. This is his wildest dream come true.
Survivor super duper fan like me.
I love that. Super duper fans are, you know, obviously greater than super fans, and super fans are already pretty
cool. Are you a super duper fan?
I would say I'm a super fan. I don't know if I'm a super duper fan. I think that it's hard to anoint yourself a super duper fan. Someone would have to knight me super duper fan.
Oh, I'm knighting you super duper fan.
Okay, fine. Then I'll take it. I will take it. I feel like you as a super duper fan, I will accept the knighthood of being a super duper fan. Mm. I just don't want to like be out there and like say it myself. I feel
no.
like that's really puffing my chest up too much in that area. but I think for Adam, we're certainly seeing like why this matters to him, that it's his biggest dream happening at the same time as his worst nightmare. And that is awful. But I think also we have seen him, you know, we've seen him on the wrong side of a vote. We've seen him pretty cleanly articulate why things should flip moving forward. So we've seen good strategy talk from him. And now we're seeing this big emotional moment here with him in episode 4, finding an idol. That should be pretty big. I know that Colin Stone is a real advocate of Adam being like the new Spencer, the old young lad or something mm-hmm. like that. I could see that that's something that's possibly developing here with Adam, don't you?
Certainly, yeah. I definitely could see him in terms of that being the type of player that he is. You know, it's also similar to the John Mish story going back to
right.
San Juan del Sur, and also has a similar idol find and sort of, and that really was, you know, what roped Steven into John Mish as the winner of San Juan del Sur. So we'll see how that all plays out from here.
I'm not necessarily feeling like this is the winner. This is definitely the winner after a moment like this. I feel like there are still several candidates on the board, but this
I do feel like that we say that just after every single person finds an idol. Like, exactly. Oh, David found an idol winner. He's the winner.
We got it. It's over. Case closed. We found the winner.
Right.
How could there be two winners if two people have found idols so far? I'm so confused. I don't know what to think. I think it's a great sign for him. If he is truly indeed a super duper fan, then you would like to think that he will play that idol well when the time comes. This swap could be very good for him. So let's see. It's a really intriguing development for that story. And I really liked the humanizing of him this week too. I mean, obviously heart goes out to him for a really, really terrible situation of being out there while his mom is back home being sick. But I liked the way that it was revealed on the episode. I thought it was a really heartfelt moment, really made me feel for the guy. So I imagine I'm not alone in rooting for him. I think that if he was, even if he wasn't already the Redditor, if this wasn't already AVPR, I think that people would still be pretty psyched, not just super duper fans, but I think seeing him in this moment, find the idol and, you know, talking about it the way that he talked about it, I think people are compelled to be on Adam's side right now.
All right. So, Josh, I want to take some questions from the listeners for you. Of course, you can email the show all week long, wiggleroom@robhasawebsite.com. Derek has a question for you and wants to know, Josh, did you fall in love with Chris as I did?
Did I fall in love with Chris? I mean, you know, put Chris towards the top of the power rankings of survivors. I'd love to hug, you know, I would like,
he'll snap you in two.
No, it'll be great. It's going to be a great hug. That was incredible. Watching him Hulk through that challenge with, you know, again, it really does, like when you have the Gen Xers and the millennials in a really physical challenge, it really does feel like the adults and the kids. Like, it feels like, it reminded me of when my brother and I, when we were kids, when we were like 2 and 4 years old, like wrestling my dad on the floor of our living room. And it looked like just like that. Two tiny creatures with no chance whatsoever at possibly toppling this gigantic human being, even when your powers are combined. There's just no way. So it really looked like, it literally looked to me like dad wrestling with his two sons as these people, as the millennials are trying to take him down. So I loved the visual. I thought that was great. And he's a beast. He truly is a handsome man in those challenges. So I do like Chris. I like Chris for that. I'm not loving Chris's game so far. It's not really working out great for Chris so far. And he does seem to get,
I don't think it's been bad.
I don't think it's been good. I don't think it's been good. He's been on the losing side of two tribal councils, even if he was correct on the vote this week. It's not a great start for Chris. I know that you're primed to be in his corner because he's your winner.
No, but I'll be an apologist.
That's gotta look pretty bad. Apologize.
Everything that, according to what he was thinking going into the Paul vote, was fine. He had no idea that Paul put his foot in his mouth and then caused the women to end up sort of changing their vote right before tribal council. I'd say that was probably the worst of it based on the four episodes. And then going into this week's vote, I mean, he was on the right side of the numbers, and Lucy ended up flipping back because she felt bad about her relationship with Chris and Brett. And she was like, those guys were pretty upset. So I'm going to go back. And basically, they didn't even have to really leverage the situation to get the numbers back. They just sort of like guilted her into coming back. And with her also, I think, came Sunday. And so they had the majority. Ken didn't end up flipping against them ultimately. And then it just so happened that David played the idol to sort of flip against them. But even if they stayed true and they didn't ultimately have a swap coming up this week, what are they going to do? Vote out Chris or Brett going into this tribal council? So he might not be in the ideal position going into too much further into the game as you get into like merge votes, especially if the millennials have the numbers. But I don't think that he's played particularly poorly.
I don't think he's played particularly poorly, but I don't like his position right now. And I don't like the history of him being wrong both times. I think that that's not a great look. And I don't know, like, I kind of get like Hunter Ellis vibes from this guy. In the sense of like, here's a guy who, you know, based on looks alone, on abilities, being charismatic, being very physical, should do really well at this game. But for whatever reason, there's just outplaying that's happening underneath the surface that he should be able to see. And is I feel like Swap is sort of make or break for this guy, that it could be that it, this could be a rebound moment. But right now he's really got only two sturdy people as far as the Gen Xers go. So he's going to need to start fostering some really good new relationships whenever this swap occurs. Or it could be like, all right, well, now's the time to get rid of the Hulk so we don't have to worry about the Hulk moving forward. So I don't feel fantastic about Chris going into week five. I feel like he's one of the most endangered people on the show right now.
Mm. Speaking of outplay, Josh, let me read you an email that came in from one of our listeners, Shannon, who said, "Hi, Rob. I figured that the Wiggle Room is the right place to ask this question. As an avid listener to RHAP, including a second go-round of TEOS, I have a bone to pick with you regarding your pet peeve of people getting the order of outwit, outplay, outlast wrong."
Okay.
"How come it bothers you so much, but on a regular basis, you refer to tribes as groups or teams and to challenges as competitions?"
Wow. Oh my God.
"This wonderful game comes with a terminology, and I feel like you and Steven made a point to highlight this fact during the quote-unquote first merge on Australian Survivor Know-It-Alls, but time and time again, you are inconsistent with your respect for said terminology. And Josh, the writer, the protector of the sacred word, lets you get away with it at least five times each chapter of Evolution of Strategy."
You know, I gotta be honest, a lot of stuff is happening on those chapters of the Evolution of Strategy. You know, I'm not really hanging on to every single word that Rob is saying, and I'm sure vice versa.
Okay.
We're just trying to survive. We're just trying to make it through a 2.5 hour sit down recording session every day. So you know, sometimes things are going to slip through the cracks. I mean, if Ken was recording the Evolution of Strategy with you, Rob, you would not be getting away with abusing the words, the language of Survivor. He would not let you get away with that, Ken McNichol. No chance.
We are very excited to announce that this Christmas TEOS is being issued on vinyl. So that's going to be the gift that it's on 38 records.
Yeah, a McNichol plated.
Chapter one is 39 records.
Yeah, a McNichol plated vinyl edition.
39 records.
Yes, it's going to be really good. Honestly, Rob, I have not noticed. I have not paid attention to you calling them groups, competitions, anything, members, tribe members of the like. I you say what you want to say as long as the content is good and I'm happy.
Speaking of a bone to pick with us, this is a question from David Baltazar, who says, "Which of the remaining players is the leading candidate to have a Ken Bone story arc?"
Oh no, we're talking about Ken Bone in here. Get your Ken Bone out of my wiggle room.
Ken's so emotional like a girl.
No, he's not.
He's undecided. He's just undecided. So who is the person from Survivor Millennials versus Gen X that we as a Survivor viewing community are going to decide based on nothing more than appearance? We are going to turn into our mascot. We are going to love this person until 2 or 3 days later we realize that the guy is an idiot and or an asshole.
This happen a lot on Survivor? I mean, we're making a joke, but I feel like that the tribes come out and we find out who's on each team, right? And we see all of the members of the team.
Yeah.
And then we instantly like, oh, this person is awesome. This is the greatest guy ever. And I can't wait to see this guy. Doesn't it always happen? And then they get on the show and then it's like, oh,
Kyle Jason's going to be such a cool dude.
Right. And then we literally like the same exact thing, whether it's things they've posted on Reddit or we find out on their Twitter, like, wait, hold up a second. This person said... He's looking at the Jennifer Lawrence photos.
Right, you know. Right.
So it happens.
So who is the person that seems like a superstar but is secretly a nightmare person? Like that's the question we're asking here. If we're doing like the Ken Bone 1-to-1 in terms of like trying to say like who is the most Ken Bone-ish physically?
Ken Boneham, right?
I do believe that Adam came into this game with a red sweater. So
Reddit sweater.
So he had a Reddit sweater. So that could be a candidate. And Zeke also has a fine mustache. So maybe it's like some combination of Adam and Zeke. That's your Ken Bone.
Yeah. But to be fair, just to be clear, neither of them we're saying has the checkered past.
Well, we don't know. Who knows? You know, who not?
I think we know with Adam. I think it would have come up, certainly. Yeah, Zeke has a checkered past that he posted on Rob as a website beforehand. That's, yeah, that's yes. his checkered.
Oh, his, God, yeah.
His dirty secret.
Go back and read those blogs. They are
if that
dangerous.
Got out, it could ruin him.
It could ruin everything. I don't know. I mean, that's always the risk. I mean, Survivor is so compelling because these are real people in these real situations, but they come off as TV characters, and so they're people that you really like when you see them on TV, but then, you know, just wait for that AMA. Wait for that overshare that will tip the hand and reveal the true monster lurking beneath the bone.
To be fair, this happens probably a little bit more with Big Brother contestants. That tends
to
happen.
Well, they're also not out there to defend themselves, right?
It happens.
It'll happen. One of the things that has been great is that the millennials versus Gen Xers, they've been quiet on the social media. So they're not really going to be piping up to defend themselves too much.
Okay. This is a question from Will from America, who says, who do you think will have the most trouble adjusting to new tribes in the swap next week? Who do you foresee having the easiest time?
Ooh, all right. How do you want to structure this? How do you want to do this? You want to give me like your top three on the board of who is going to do well here, who you think is primed to do well, who is primed to do poorly? I feel like a first pick for me for somebody who I think will do really well, and it's not just because I like him so much. I think Jay will be fine anywhere. I think that Jay is affable. He is likable. I think that even like these Gen Xers are going to get a kick out of the guy. He's useful in challenges. I think that, you know, he truly has proved himself to be, at least of the three Triforces, to be the Triforce of Wisdom, to have a bit of a head on his shoulders. So I feel like Jay is going to be okay no matter where he goes. Bold prediction. Yeah.
I think the people that are just easy to get along with are easy to get along with no matter which tribe they're on. And so I think that the people that are sort of more set in their ways, I think those are people that are going to have problems in this tribe swap.
I feel concerned for Chris. I feel worried about Chris. I think that Chris being down the way that he is down right now in Gen X is not a good look for that guy, especially about to go into a very volatile situation where things are going to change. If he can't breathe, like if he can't really catch his breath after a swap, a day after, you know, another one of his allies has bitten the dust, I think that it could be very bad for him. So I think that those are my, you know, that's my, I like Jay very much, and I'm worried for Chris. Those are probably my two.
Yeah, he easily could be the next person out of the game where he ends up in some sort of a tribe swap. But you would think that you would want to keep your strength in that spot where you end up having the first vote after a tribe swap. And I know that's the same vote, the same spot that a person with probably a similar physique in Truck, not Truck 108, Joel yes. from Micronesia ends up going out in that spot. I think the first vote after a swap. So ideally, and it didn't work out great for them to get rid of him in that spot because they lose a bunch of immunity challenges in a row. But I think you could see him go out, but ideally you'd want to keep your strength.
I think also, you know, a lot of it is depending on what you're forecasting and what, you know, how did these tribes shake out? Like who is where, who seems primed to be picked off by the, you know, the majority millennials or the majority Gen X tribe?
Yes.
All of that. So, I mean, like that all has to be baked into the equation.
You're right.
But for me, Chris would be somebody that I'd be going after pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. You know, I'm sort of looking at it from a perspective of, you know, all things being equal, of people looking at, okay, well, if I'm in a bad spot where you could have people who are millennials who are outside of the numbers like Zeke or Adam looking at, okay, let me build something new with my group, which we do see from time to time happen at the swap. But if the fix is in where the millennials are saying like, hey, let's just pick off Gen X after the swap, no matter what, he's definitely a person you could see go out and then they wouldn't worry about keeping their challenge strength.
I can really see that happening.
Or their competition strength.
Right. Their competition strengths. Yeah. I almost didn't notice, to be honest.
Gregory McBean has a question, Josh, and he wants to know, I just want to talk to you about the Hannah seeing Adam looking for the idol thing. What do you think it means? Are Hannah and Adam on the same side, or will she use this info against him? Or will she
use me?
Yeah.
Use me. Yeah, that was an amazing, amazing moment in this idol find of Hannah just calling out to him and just like totally blasting his spot. What it tells me is I can't imagine that this idol is going to be a secret. I can't imagine that anybody on the Millennials tribe isn't at least highly suspicious of Adam having an idol. If, you know, Hannah really did see him in that moment, feel like that spot's getting blown up pretty damn quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like that. It was a very funny scene, but it also not a great look for Adam in terms of being able to protect that secret. I feel like that's probably going to be unleashed fairly quickly. What did you make of all that?
Yeah, it's interesting because we saw her having the conversation with Adam and Zeke where she wants to get back together with them. But I also wouldn't put it past Hannah to be able to, if she, you know, either unintentionally letting it slip to somebody like Michelle, or if she feels like she's on the ropes, volunteering that information at some point. So it does feel like a very messy loose end for Adam to need to talk to. Like, if this was Breaking Bad, like, he needs to, like, whack her. I guess he needs to, to, like, vote her out of the game just because she knows that information.
Oh my God, that got very violent. Or
the Survivor version.
Yeah,
the Survivor version of it.
Yeah. Well, what it also tells me is for Hannah to, like, shout that, to say, "How's your idol hunt going, buddy?" Like, either she's doing a very good Adam impression to Adam, or it signals to me that she doesn't care enough about whatever relationship would exist between her and Adam in a working relationship sense to quiet down and not shout that from the hilltops. For her to see Adam in what could be this big moment of discovery and to blow his spot up like that suggests to me that she doesn't really necessarily care if she blows up Adam's spot.
I feel like that she probably did not have ill intentions. I just think that it's
kind of a
messy thing.
You think that's Hannah being Hannah?
Yeah. But I do like the idea of having to get her out at this point. Sort of like when Dawson said to Jeff Kent, like, implying that she knew who he was. And he's like, "I got to get her out of the game."
Yeah. Oh, so Adam is the Jeff Kent.
He'd be the Jeff Kent. I don't think it's going to happen at all like that. But it would be fun to see where, okay, she's the only person that knows about this, so I got to get her out of the game, so to keep this secret protected.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that we're going to get any sort of anti-Obama final words from Adam either. So
there's a lot of that already.
I don't think that's happening.
Jeff Kent did it when it was just cool.
Kent Bone?
Yeah. Yeah, now there's so much. All right.
That's how Aris thinks of Ken McNichol.
Kent Bone?
Yeah.
Trevor Roberts has a check-in with you, Josh. Is Josh able to look at Jessica in the non-pink eye now that her infection is subsiding?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I'm happy that it's going away. I think that I will always, like, see the ghost of it every time. I think that I will always see the haunting memory of the pink eye, and who knows, perhaps it could return. But I am very happy to see that it has cleared up for Jessica. It was very difficult for the first few episodes, and she absolutely looked much, much healthier in the eyes in episode 4. That was great. It has been a struggle. The struggle's been real.
And one other literary question, Josh. This is from Dylan, who says, "With the kids going off to hunt a pig, the episode took a real Lord of the Flies theme. Who on the Millennial Tribe fits into the book? Who is Ralph, the natural leader, who will preserve himself through the game? Who is the villainous rebel, Jack? Is there a piggy, a helpless, and there's a figgy?"
I think that's it. That's the one. She's going to get pushed over and she's going to lose her glasses and it's going to be really terrible.
Spoilers. Helpless for tribe member waiting to get picked off. What about Simon, the tribe member who will stick up for others? Is there a beast on the Gen X tribe that the millennials should fear?
Yeah, Chris. Yeah. He's the beast. Who's got the conch? I mean, Adam had the conch this week. He found the conch shell and opened it up and he got the idol.
That's why he got to talk so loud.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, it's been forever since I've read Lord of the Flies, but my memory is that Ralph and Jack are kind of buddies at first. And then, like, Jack is really taking, like, a dark, wild, violent turn. So I wonder, like, now my extreme Jay bias is showing. Could Jay be the Ralph and could Taylor be the Jack? Taylor even has, like, this sort of scary, primal, wild-eyed look during the reward challenge earlier this week, so I was getting some psycho vibes off of that guy in that moment. Maybe he's the Jack. Maybe he's the guy that's going to take things too far, and his buddy Jay is going to have to realize, whoa, my dude kissed her and my dude went crazy. And Figgy is Piggy. Figgy is Piggy just because of the name. That's the only
yes. And
I've always identified as Piggy in Lord of the Flies. No surprise there.
Josh, before we wrap this up, you know, I'd be kicking myself if I didn't ask you if you got any exclusives this week in your coverage of Survivor.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame. It's, you know, it's going to be 2 weeks in a row of me not being able to really bring an exclusive to the table. Last week, we had to lean on your son, Anthony, for some help. And as I mentioned last week, I was so fond of Shut Up Tim's Lucy in the Sky cover. And I let the cat out of the bag that, you know, myself and Wanda, we'd been thinking about Lucy in the Sky for later in the season. We had no idea it was going to be 1 week later. So there's just not a lot of time to rebound on that. I got a lot of suggestions on Twitter for some possible exclusives we could look into. Very popular one was Eye of the Tiger. I floated that Wanda's way. She came up with a chorus, but that was really it, if you want to listen to that.
Let's just idle the tiger. Mom, she's ruling the tribe. David's up to bust out his hidden idol. The last pre-merge survivor to play an idol this right was Russell, hence not Tom Westman or Wanda.
So Wanda tried. Yeah, but, she tried.
That's great. And that is actually from the band Survivor. Indeed. Millennials versus Gen X.
That's correct. That's right. So Wanda tried. She couldn't get much further than that. She was honestly, some very sad emails between myself and Wanda this week. She was really excited. She's never done a Beatles cover before. She was really looking forward to doing Lucy in the Sky. So Shut Up Tim got there first. He claimed it. So that's all you're going to get. Just some Survivor, just some Eye of the Tiger Mom. And you will just have to close your eyes and pretend like you can hear what Wanda's version of Lucy in the Sky sounds like. Maybe one of these days you will be able to hear it, but not today, not right now.
All right, Josh. Well, great stuff as usual. You can follow Josh on Twitter at Round Howard. And of course, you could email into the show, wiggleroom@robhasawebsite.com. Josh, I'm very excited to begin our journey to next Sunday's premiere of The Walking Dead Season 7.
Sunday Burquest's premiere of Season 7 of The Walking Dead. I'm really excited to go to that party with you. That's going to be a really fun viewing party. Looking forward to seeing what her millennial kid's reaction to Negan's victim is going to be.
Yeah, I think there's 80 different outcomes that could be.
We've been thinking about at least that many possibilities. But no, I'm excited for it too. I'm excited to get back into Walking Dead mode. You and I are going to have some Walking Dead podcasts coming up this week. As you listen to this, perhaps, there will possibly even be some Walking Dead preview material for you guys to chew on.
Chris would be a good Walking Dead character.
He would be. He's kind of, I mean, he kind of looks like Abraham.
Yeah.
You know, give him like the Abraham handlebar mustache, and like he really kind of looks like Abraham Ford. He could be good. He could be good. That's a lot of man.
Zap some zombies.
It's a lot of man to survive the zombie apocalypse. I feel like, you know, he seems like a pretty prime target for a walker. So I don't know. I like him on paper, but I wonder how it works out in practice.
All right. Well, good stuff. Of course, Josh is also covering Westworld on the post-show recaps.
Yeah, no, that's really fun. Joe Garfine and I were podcasting about that every single week. Westworld's really, really good. Have you been watching it at all, Rob?
No, I haven't caught up yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Very fun. Three episodes as of the time that you're listening to this, and it's a hoot. It's a wild show. It's a Wild West show. It is violent. It is disturbing. It is holding the mirror up in some really interesting ways. So I think that there's a lot, much like Game of Thrones, sort of philosophically, that you can put your head around. That's really fun in this really kind of cool, visceral way. So Westworld's great. Westworld's really good fall TV right now.
Okay. All right. Well, good stuff. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Be on the lookout for David Bloomberg to come in with Why Lucy Lost back with me. No Bloom on Bloomberg this week. So that's going to be coming up for you guys next. So be on the lookout for that. Josh, thank you as always. And we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Picture yourself on a beach out in Fiji with Chris, Brett, and Cece, all part of your tribe. Lucy approaches and says who she's voting, the girl with the very pink eyes. Something about Lucy owning the vote doesn't quite sit right with Ken. Dave plays his idol for Jess and her eyes. Lucy's gone. Lucy in the tribe was idled. Lucy in the tribe was idled. Lucy in the tribe.